This is a production of Cornell University.
CAA meeting, December 15th, 2010.
So I guess Amy, Mary will be with us momentarily. Amy just checked in on that. Does anyone have any late additions to the agenda? Well, it's kind of old business.
Okay.
The only thing that I'll add to the agenda is that Ari has an update for, or we have an update on the letter to supervisors. So we'll, actually I'll talk about that now. We're waiting for Mary. Ari put together a letter to go to supervisors, something we've been talking about for a while, in support, to be signed by President Skorton, in support of people serving on the assembly and the importance of the work and being involved. So Amy very nicely put together a supervisor info sheet that I'm going to pass around. If people want to put their supervisor's information in there, they will get a lovely letter. It's been approved by Tommy, and I guess we'll go up to President Skorton next. Is that where it goes?
Yeah.
Next, to be signed and sent out. So people want to...
Will we be putting something about this on our site or something when it comes time for people running for EA? Because I think that there's people who would like to run but feel like
they can't.
Yes,
I think we can probably put something on there.
It would be really wonderful if we could get more representation.
Yes.
Probably at the same time, you might want a message from the EA chair about the election and referencing that in the process.
Okay. Any other suggestions for voters?
The president does generally send an email encouraging people to participate and employers to support them. Support them during the petition period.
Any other thoughts? I'll send, just in kind of skipping along to business of the day while we're waiting for Mary, I've got a couple of people who have offered to serve on committees, so I'll send an email out with their names. I forgot to bring them with me, I'm sorry. I've got another person who's willing to serve on a transportation committee, and then I have someone else who said put me on whatever committee would be best used, so I will pass those along.
Thank you.
Yes, and Leslie here has offered to serve as our EA rep to the Faculty Senate. So if no one has any objection to that, we can appoint her to that. Anybody dying to not
anybody else want
to
do it?
Anyone else want to do it? Mr. Parliamentarian, do we have to officially vote on that, or can we just...
I'm sorry.
I didn't want to ask Amy.
No.
Okay.
They're appointed by the chair.
Okay. Congratulations, Leslie.
Thank you.
Consider yourself appointed.
The only report that I have is we had the leadership breakfast this morning, and we talked about the new website being put together, My Cornell, which is going to launch sometime in January. It's similar but yet not the same as UPortal. It will replace UPortal, but it's really neat, and hopefully next time Peggy's here, she can maybe talk to us about it a little bit and maybe show it. But it'll be a customizable website that you can kind of select your own features to add to it.
But it also has the possibility for us to put things up about employee assembly that would go to all staff. And ideally, they would use it as their homepage so that it would generate, you know, they would see the information every day, and yeah, we'd be out there more visible.
And Leslie and I are meeting on Friday with Mary, so if anybody has anything pressing, here she comes now. But if anybody has anything pressing that they want to add to that meeting after today, just let us know and we can add that to our agenda. Hello.
Sorry. Welcome.
That's all right. Welcome.
I think I'm going to change my first name to Sorry.
Oh.
Or Sorry I'm Late, actually, would be probably better.
Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So we've just been talking about going through the rest of the agenda. We were waiting, so if we want to jump right in. I'm sure Marilyn kind of shared with you that we wanted to kind of continue the discussion about morale and go from there. So I don't know if you want to.
Well, you know, I was trying to think about how to start this, and I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to turn this back around and have you all talk to me first about what you mean by morale. So when you say morale, what do you mean?
For me, I think it's just, you know, years ago, I used to feel very energized about coming to Cornell and working here and being very proud of the work I did and very supported.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, that's kind of waned off a little bit,
mm-hmm.
just with what's going on. But, I mean, for me, it's a feeling of not being as heard as I used to be,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason.
Okay, others?
In a different kind of context, it's individual, but it's also kind of a group think. Morale in general, the kind of cultural feel, seems to have changed over the last couple of years. So it's not so much an individual thing, but overall.
So tell me what you mean by that.
it's kind of like... whether it's real or not, or whether everyone is being impacted by it, the general negative sentiment
mm-hmm.
about work. And in particular, when it's new employees or people that have come from the outside for advancement or career paths, there seems to be this unspoken, no one's going anywhere right now.
I guess I can speak from my own personal experience. I'm currently probably going to layoff status. And I'm sorry, my mouth is full.
That's okay.
It's so embarrassing. I've gotten wonderful support from your staff. I mean, I just want you to know that the HR end, it has been unbelievable. So that's good news. The not so good news is that I know that the employment picture in general, both here on campus and outside of the Cornell, is very, very difficult. And so I'm terrified about taking this step. And from what I've observed, and this is just an observation, purely subjective, from what I'm observing is that the positions that I might be interested in or feel that I could be eligible for are going to outside.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and with, you know, I just, one example was I applied for last October, I applied for a position in the ombudsman, the halftime ombudsman.
Mm-hmm.
I have many years' experience as a facilitator, conflict resolution mediator, and all of those things, but the person who took the position, this is what really blew me away, has a master's in conflict resolution, and he moved here from New York City for a halftime term position, which tells you something about the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not the fault of that, it's just that I'm vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not sure what kind of support the university can do to help with that.
Mm-hmm.
So let me take it one step further and I'll be quiet. One
mm-hmm.
of the other problems is that in the layoff status, it also is what we're looking into right now, but it does preclude me from actually doing work as a volunteer in the university, because which would help network and maybe raise my you know, whatever, in a positive way, because of that layoff status. For example, the ombudsman often has a staff rep
mm-hmm.
position. Just volunteer, I can't do it. So, and I'm worried that that's actually going to actually leak into all the other sort of academics, you know, the notice and response facilitator and all those sorts of things. And I don't even know what my role is here anymore. So there's a certain sort of So that's, and I don't think I'm alone feeling that kind of like on the edge.
Vulnerable. That's a great word. Yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
Others?
I think adding to what Tanya was talking about, the word that I would use is feeling valued or not feeling valued. And it also fits with what you're describing and to some degree what you're talking about. That I guess to add to that, not feeling the same level of pride about being a member of this community that I used to feel. Not that I'm embarrassed by it or anything, but it's not like it's something that I'm carrying around the same way as I used to carry it.
I think one of the reasons people aren't as excited about their jobs anymore is that they're hunkered down, and I know that word to use, but when people think about all the opportunities that Cornell still offers, educational opportunities, personal professional development, people aren't taking advantage of that, so they're just kind of gloomy about their job. I got to go to work, I have to do my job, maybe I'm doing a little more than I was before the crisis, and they're not thinking the same way about opportunities, especially opportunities that HR is trying to push towards flexibility in the workplace, they wouldn't even ask.
Yep. It's like that surviving versus thriving.
Good way to put it.
Well, and I think also one of the other reasons maybe that people aren't taking advantage is because they want to get home. They want to only be here the amount of time that they need to be here, and then they want to be able to be themselves because they don't feel like they can be themselves here anymore, and so they need that release to be able to do it somewhere else.
And I think one of the things that's true is that it isn't everywhere, but the group think is it feels everywhere. So if that's not your experience here, you're not likely to feel safe saying, gosh, I actually don't have that experience. Because those who do, I've had a lot of people say, I wouldn't say to others that I'm not having that experience because I'd be shut down. And so newcomers here will say, gosh, if I told them what it was like where I came from, I feel like I'd be screamed at here. Yeah. So here's what I wrote down. Not as proud, not as energized, not being heard, kind of a group think. So it may not be my individual experience, but a general negative sentiment. A lot of unspoken stuff, terrified, it's sort of a subjective feeling, but it's a feeling anyway, sort of wondering if I'm vulnerable, not feeling as valued. The feelings have changed about being at Cornell. Don't feel like we can take advantage of the opportunities that are here, hunkered down, and like surviving versus thriving. And those are great ways of talking about morale, which is really about the climate, or sometimes you'll hear it talked about as the culture of an organization, although cultures don't tend to change and climate does. And so what I thought was interesting was the way that the questions were framed. So what's HR going to do to fix it? And HR actually doesn't fix the morale, right? HR can put together programs and services and policies and procedures. But the morale of an organization is the responsibility of everybody in it. And I think part of the struggle that an organization has, and all organizations to some extent are dealing with the struggle around morale, because the climate that we are all feeling is in part what is happening in the organization, and in part because organizations exist within broader frameworks. So the environment in which Cornell sits is the environment of the nation and the environment of the globe. And so, you leave here and you go to the environment outside of here, which is Tompkins County, and then New York, and then the country, and then the world. And all of that is part and parcel of how we feel. And so, we're struggling because we have issues that we're trying to address. And I think when I talk to people, I spent a couple of days with colleagues at other universities. For better or worse, the university hit its financial circumstances very hard, very quickly. And so we took out a lot of staff right away. So some universities are just starting their downsizing this year. They gave raises, they did very little downsizing, and they have a much bigger financial problem right now. So they're just beginning where we were in 2009. So their problem is actually bigger dollar-wise than ours was in 2009 because they carried their costs and built their deficit for 2 years. I don't know. I mean, maybe they were hoping that they would grow their way out of it, hoping the economy would bounce back. And it has a little bit, but, not enough. So I don't know exactly how they'll fare, but they're looking, honestly, we're looking very beleaguered and tired, and they're looking a little bit more like deer in headlights. I think there are some things that we can do, and we just have to decide together whether we want to do them. You know, one is to take the temperature of the staff climate, to do a climate survey. It certainly would be a baseline, and that might not be a bad idea. You know, I think we could get a sense of how people are feeling. I think we would see some variations in how people are really feeling. And that may be something that we should consider. We were on our way to doing it before we hit the skids and we stopped it. But that's one thing that we can do. I think that we can do more concrete communication about what we're actually accomplishing. Some of the communications, I think, have been abstract about what the changes have actually meant, or at least harder for people, I think, to understand. I think that they've been well-intended, but they're very difficult because there's a very conceptual level. So some of the reaction I've gotten from people is, so I don't really understand spans and layers. Is it done? You know, when the president says, like, there'll be no more major downsizing, like, does that mean there's no more downsizing? You know, what is the IT change mean? Is it happening? Has it stopped? You know, like, I think we could do more in terms of some of the communication. My general sense of this is that there's no magic bullet. There's not some way that you're going to suddenly have people say, I feel a lot better. I think it's about sort of inching our way back as a community to where people feel better about things than they did yesterday, and then better, you know, the next day than they did the day before. And I think that's just very, very hard for folks, and realizing that the financial problems have mitigated, and that, you know, there's no magic bullet to all of this. And that's just difficult, I think, for people who are somewhat beleaguered and tired. And I think it's communicating that the plans that are in place actually have a connection to getting to the other side in a healthy way. So the strategic plan, the work that we did with Bain, those are actually were put in place to end up in a place where we won't, you know, we'll be healthier. I'm not sure people make that connection very well.
I think it's hard to, because that's such a high level thing. Yes, it does drill down, but it's such a high level, and it would be nice to see some of that same level of transparency in units. You know, what is your unit doing? How are they getting to their new model, kind of thing? Because I don't know how other people are thinking, but a lot of us are having changes happen, and you're just saying, oh, we're talking about this, but you don't have a
not a timeline.
Yeah, it's just constantly you're waiting. So it would be nice to kind of have some idea when.
I think that's right, and I think bringing one of the people that you need to spend more time with than you have is Chris Halliday, who runs the organizational effectiveness area, because Chris and Kathy Berggren are the ones that are doing the work redesign work across the campus. You know, I know you've heard me say this a ton of times, but the part of the difficulty is that there's no leader, not at Cornell, not in the country, that's ever been through this before. So there's no pattern to follow from before. The last time the country went through this was the Great Depression, and there's nobody leading that led anybody through this before. So we're kind of, and the circumstances then were very, very different than the circumstances of today. And so much of what we're trying to do, we're charting anew. And so the frustration I think is that and we're not as patient a people as people were. Well, how do I know? I wasn't alive then. And maybe they weren't patient then either. I'm not a particularly patient person. I'll just state it in the personal sense. You know, I just keep thinking, well, there ought to be some way to just fix this, right? We've essentially made our cuts, as far as I can see. I don't see how we can be any smaller on the staff side. So, like, now we just should be able to, like, rally together. We're all smart people and figure out, with this many people, how do you get the work done, right? Like, how do you move people around and, like, revisit your processes? And shouldn't, like, I don't know, do you take a week and figure that out? Or I just keep thinking there ought to be a way to do this if you all just think hard enough. And it doesn't work like that. You know, there's a sort of a chaos to the situation that frustrates me. And so your questions are reasonable, but they assume that there's actually somebody with the answers, and they're just not telling everybody else. And that's what creates morale problems, I think, is the sense that leaders, whoever the leaders, and I don't, in loosely coupled organizations like universities, the leaders exist all over the place, know, but they just aren't sharing. And I think in this environment, that's actually not the problem. It's not that there's not a sharing of the answers, it's that the answers are emerging in odd and chaotic ways, and the leaders are finding them out in odd and chaotic ways.
Well, I think that fits with a conversation that we had when we met with you, when you were talking about David and his desire to be more transparent, and all of a sudden people are now seeing the emperor has no clothes. And that creates a feeling of vulnerability.
So I don't like that term, don't use it. No, the emperor has no
clothes. Sorry. The feeling of vulnerability. Because we were accustomed to believing that there were answers.
Yes.
And now there aren't answers, but we want to believe that there
That's
are.
Right.
And so we begin to not trust people because
right.
we're thinking that they're withholding.
That's right.
And so then there's this unease.
Right. So there's this, I've been doing this, some reading that Sam Bachrach has been sending my way to try to calm me down because I'm a very anxious person. And one of the things that he's been having me read is about learning organizations. And learning organizations are actually fascinating, and that's where I truly believe that's the future. Successful organizations will be learning organizations, and everybody will participate as learning organizations. And the metaphor is the same concept as brains, right? Everybody's kind of moving in these oddly chaotic ways, the way your synapses work in your brain, which I'm beginning to see my brain this way, like ping, 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 like a ping pong, you know, like one of those things we used to play, you know, what are those things called? No, we know the
pinball
machine. You know,
showing mine.
And you know, they're going all over the place, but somehow, in some strange way, something that resembles a thought comes out and it makes sense. It's learning organizations. The idea is that all these different groups are learning and processing at the same time, and that in a learning organization, you value all different sorts of groups at the same time thinking and creating and innovating without as much worry about hierarchies or structures, because the idea is that innovation can happen anywhere. And somehow through those learning organizations, if you trust people, the right answers will come through. And I'm increasingly convinced that that's the way in a sort of loosely coupled organization like a university, that that's the way that the future has got to be. But it does mean, that you have to give up your convention, the concept that leaders are the only place that answers derive from, right? That HR owns morale and the president owns the solution or the dean owns the solution. And for many of us, that takes away your security blanket, that when things get bad, someone else gives you the answer. And in the leadership sense, it means you have to give up control. And in the individual sense, it means that when things are rough, you have to jump in and help solve the problem. And so everything you thought you knew gets all mixed up and muddled. So when we get to get back to morale, it means it's all of our responsibility to jump in and figure out, recognizing that it's a long-term kind of slog, well, how do we create a place, recognizing that it's going to be difficult for a long time, where people are energized to be here, and that being here doesn't exhaust us. What is it that we can do together to make Cornell the kind of a place where we can put our feet in together and make it the best place it can be?
Can I respond to you? And I'm going to brainstorm response. I don't have an answer either, but I'm just curious about what your thoughts about some things that I've been thinking as you've been talking. I'm sort of thinking of specific cases where there are decision makers in a unit who really are making decisions, I think, in a sort of in a dysfunctional way. And it is creating from my observations, it's actually responsible for some of the morale problems.
Sure.
Because the change in university is also, what that does is it does unbalance the decision-making process. And so what's happened is it's kind of created sort of a vacuum. And the decision-makers are seeping into that vacuum and making really interesting decisions. But with that said, that's fine. You know, they make mistakes, they make silly decisions, or in my case, I think, you know, kind of decisions are off like that without really thinking it through. But with that said, there's no recourse, or there's no way to actually correct that. There's no correction, there's no accountability, there's no way, there's no loop, no communication loop, so that when those sorts of things happen, that maybe there could be some recourse.
Well, we don't.
So that's the problem.
Right. Well, we don't know that there's none. There's none obvious, right? Or there's
right.
none
or
that exists.
Safely.
Well,
right.
often it seems like the decision is what you hear, not to be involved in the process.
So
right. So there, well, there's a double-edged sword going on there,
right.
because there is the engagement in the process of which, in logic, with the example I'm thinking of, there isn't. It's a very, very sort of hierarchical situation, and the decisions are made from the top, and really, truly the staff do not have any say. And that might be an anomaly. I don't know what it's like for the rest of the university.
First of all, in an organization like the university, there's lots of anomalies, right? Because that's the for better or worse in universities. You know, I don't think most people would think the best way to work a university is hierarchically or in a unified way. Because what you give up is so much more than what you get. So they are, by design,
very loosely coupled and very, there's tons of anomalies.
Right.
And in those, you run lots of risk.
Yes.
And so you are going to have areas that don't, that have, you're dependent in those then on lots of individuals, some of whom don't act in or serve the best interests either of the small unit or of the larger unit. And that's the risk you run
right.
in organizations that are loosely coupled. That there's yeah. no doubt about that. That is the risk of organizations that don't function to a single mission.
Right.
I mean, they do in the broadest sense, but they don't in a precise sense. And there's no doubt about that, that's the risk you run. What has to happen in those cases then is that, again, sort of going back to the concept of empowerment, is that they lose by design, that the best people don't stay there, and over time, those individuals that make the wrong choices don't get to keep those powerful positions, and they wither. And so what you need then, which we don't have now, is the enrichment of resources that allow you to move talented people away from those nodes and towards healthier, more vibrant nodes.
One thought I have is I'm wondering on the climate survey, would it be helpful for information, and I don't know if this is included in that, of maybe including anecdotal stories of people's actual experiences, like take the names out, but actual, because we have, our college is rich with examples of experiences that might actually be very instructive.
Yes.
I mean, I don't know if that's something you would be thinking of including, but that would be...
If we were to pursue, and of course, you know, I have limited authority about it, whether we would actually do a climate survey, but I think having the employee assembly think about it and opine on it would be a good idea.
Yeah.
If we did one, every dean that I've ever talked to, when we do get traction, always wants to know their data with enough detail that they could do something about it. Because otherwise, what's the point? I mean, data pulled up to a level that's not actionable is useless to a dean or vice president, right? I mean, if it's so homogenized, they can't tell where it's coming from, what good is it to them? So, yeah, definitely.
Can you quickly discuss why you would not be able to do a climate survey by the end of this academic year?
Well, it would be hard to actually do one by the end of the academic year. They take a long time to put together in a way that they're actually valid, and then to send it out and collect the data. They take a long time in a place this big. And you don't want to put out a survey that the leadership hasn't agreed to do something with once you're done. Otherwise, you actually create more trouble than you solve. So
there isn't one already created or we've never done one before?
No, not across the whole university. No, we've done them in pockets, and we started working on one just before the bottom fell out, but we didn't finish the design.
Who's we?
We had a committee. It had people from EA. It had faculty on it that were helping us design it. It was a broad-based group of people from around the campus.
So it wasn't necessarily just staff.
It was for staff. But we had faculty who were helping us design it. Faculty with survey background. Yeah. But it's a big endeavor to do a good job on a survey. And you don't, again, you don't want to just put out a survey, get a bunch of data, and then have the leadership say that's very nice, but we never endorsed it, so it's going in a drawer. Mm-hmm. The point isn't to do the survey. The point is to act on what you find. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, all you've done is actually make the morale worse. Mm-hmm. You want to spend enough time understanding what you want to learn, and then work with survey experts to get the right questions in the survey that you are asking, the questions that drive to those issues. It takes how long it actually takes to put together.
Yeah, I like your idea. I guess the only challenge, what I'm hearing, is going about the way, in the terms of the challenges, getting the input, make sure it's designed, is I think the problem or the concern that a lot of staff feel already is that you're developing all these processes. You people up here think you know what's right for us, and you're going to ask us what questions we think we need to know, but no one's actually just doing. And I mean, I think this goes with my conversation when President Scorman said, I think most of the people just feel like they're drowning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you originally came to Cornell because you thought it was Hawaii. You know, going to calm water, and then all of a sudden, you thought like in June when we all got our SIP or whatever, and think things are going to get better. Wow,
yeah.
I can start seeing land now. Then all of a sudden, this policies. I mean, like we heard that banks created this report, and there's going to be implications. Then all of a sudden, we just saw it. It was like no one told us like it's going to be gradually. And I think people on the top was ready for those changes because they've been in the dialogue and then the process and even in the design phase, and we were just kind of told, and you can go to this forum, and then you know, with the increase with our health care, the increase with meal choice, the increase with parking and everything, we just want to breathe. And I think it's even like the university and the departments and units are not even recognizing us. I mean, this is the first year that I ever remember, most of the place, like where the Statler hasn't done any type of winter celebration. It was nothing. And it's kind of like, what does that really mean? I don't think staff are asking, like, we should get rich or we should get, but can we just for a second just recognize that we're all doing a good job?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody has really said that on an institutional level altogether.
Well, I hear you, Curtis. I do think, and this is a difficult message to say back without sounding, so I want to say this carefully. This isn't just at Cornell. This is happening all across the country. We aren't the only place that's struggling, and so you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That we are doing the best we can. In fact, I actually just got the holiday notice from hotel, so I should make sure that you see it. You know, we do keep trying to put together events and programs. We had, you know, we do try, but it doesn't take the place of the real needs of people to stay above sea level. And I think that that's some of the difficulty that we're having. So I can give you lots of defensive answers about why, you know, we passed along only a portion of the cost and we're still underwater in our health care and, you know, blah, 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 blah. It doesn't make you feel any better. I can tell you how it feels if you're, you know, in some of the companies that just went under and how this is, you know, we now have less than 20% of the country covering their retirees, and we're still hanging on. It doesn't make you feel any good. We're in an unprecedented time in this country. No one knows exactly how to face what you're dealing with. We're doing what we can do to try to hold on. So, you know, what happened in the dialogue that we're having here is that staff feel like they're losing ground. Leaders feel like they're barely, you know, like they're doing everything they can to minimize the impact. So staff feel like it's thankless. Leaders feel like it's thankless. Board feels like we're taking too long. We feel like they're pushing us too hard. No one feels very good about the situation that we're in. You know, it's a circumstance of ingredients that you can't, we're just not going to come to a place where everybody goes, you know, I feel pretty good about this whole thing. And you know what suffers? Morale suffers. Actually, everyone's morale suffers right now. The staff don't feel good. The leadership doesn't feel particularly good. The board doesn't feel particularly good. No one is getting what they want out of it. So I don't know, maybe that means we're doing something right. And I think that what we have to try to do as a community, and this is where we have a unique opportunity at Cornell, is hold together while we figure out how to move forward, recognizing that very few places are doing well. Some are. I mean, you know, Facebook's doing amazing. Facebook. But we have some ingredients going for us that we can exploit, and that's what we have to do. We have to try to exploit those. We do have a president that continues to hold tight to the idea that he's not going to let go any more people than he absolutely has to. And that, you know, he doesn't tell you, but that has not been an easy value to hang on to. He has been pressured, and he has been pressured, and he has withstood a lot of push. He and the provost have advanced the notion that we have to have increases. It may seem to you like not a big, you know, like that ought to be obvious, but it is not obvious to give any increase when the inflation rate is at zero and we're still in a deficit. To people who say your tuition increase is obscene and 60% of your costs go to people and the biggest cost in people is non-faculty, why are you giving increases? But they have continued to advance those things. Now, that may not seem like much when you're doing two jobs, but not every university has leaders advancing those things. So we do have factors to put in the mix that we can be proud of as the non-faculty ranks. We just don't talk about those enough, I think, to give ourselves hope.
Well, I think it sounds like a Pollyanna, but I feel really positive. Maybe it's based on what I know, but a lot of people don't feel trusted, but a lot of people really need to trust the leaders, because we do. I mean, I try to say this wherever I go, the same things that Mary is saying, that the leaders have defended the employees up and down, back and forth, and I've heard that. But we also have a strategic plan that we're working towards, and all the little pieces, the chaotic pieces, they're moving in a defined direction, and we've been asked by the leaders to trust them, and maybe we, as a group of people under the leaders, just need to trust a little bit more.
Well, I think what we need to do is ask for more data and details so that we can help communicate. I think from a morale standpoint, people right now need more detail to be able to trust. That's what I'm hearing. That for folks to overcome the general negativity, they need more content to be able to do that. That it's just where we are right now. It's been a long slog of negativity nationally that I don't think we're going to get anywhere sort of with the general trust me theme, but I do think with more content we can get people there. And I think our challenge is how do we collect enough content and then share it in a way that people feel like they can say, okay, well, that's a good piece of information, but for me to understand it, I need these three more things. Like, where would I go for that? Or how would I get more information? Or like on the healthcare, you know, that increase really hurts. Why did it happen? Well, here's this data about why that happened. You know, I think people can accept even bad news if they know why it happened. And I generally just think that folks have gotten so embattled they don't even ask the questions anymore. And that's where morale kind of gets into a morale.
I think that upper leadership is doing a great job at trying to talk about it and trying to share information. And I really think that some of the key is in that middle management, in the people that you're directly reporting to, because we say, you know, staff is drowning, we're drowning. And you go to your manager and say, I'm drowning, I'm trying to do three people's jobs.
and they're saying, well, that's what we have to do. But why can't they say, okay, well, let's look at this and let's, for the time being, for the next 6 months until we have it figured out, let's figure out what we cannot do in this little bit of time.
Because they don't know either. So one of the things that's why I was saying, I think the next conversation should be with Chris and Kathy, because what we're hearing and what they've done is they've now gone to the vice presidents and they're going to start going to the deans. What we're hearing is that they don't know what to say to the workforces. They don't know what to take off people's plates. So it's got to come from the vice presidents and deans down. They need more detail. So what sounds unfeeling is actually confusion. There needs to be, so going from the point that Beth made, a strategic plan is so abstract. How does a person, even a fairly high level person, take a plan and turn it into, take this off your plate to an individual worker? How do you do that?
I think the fear with the leader is that they're afraid of saying, I don't know the answer to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they have to start saying, I don't know. Because then you, at least as a staff member, can say, I need an answer, and they're saying, I don't know an answer. You feel like, okay, they don't know either.
That's right.
And nobody wants to say, I don't know. So they kind of push it off in a, well, you know, we got to figure that out later, some point down the line.
Right.
And eventually you're getting a staff that's so disenfranchised that I can't tell you how many people I hear right now who are saying, I put in my 7.8 hours and I go home.
Yep, well, that goes to Leslie's point. And I think, you know, so, you know, I know it's abstract, but in learning organizations, these hierarchies, and it kind of goes to your point too, of who's like a smidge up higher, that stuff stops being so much of an issue, and people work together to get problems solved and new ideas forward, and it doesn't matter so much where the new idea comes from or the problem gets, it just solve the problem.
So how do we get those middle leaders into that mode of thinking, because a lot of them have some really great and really talented staff who are sitting there saying, I'm willing to work with you to find the answer. I do my job, and I'm probably the best person who could answer what I could or could not do. So put the charge back onto the staff person to say, you give me some ideas and why maybe we would not do these things.
Well, that's why I think the next step needs to be with Chris to talk a little bit about how work redesign strategies need to include everybody. Because he's, obviously, we have thousands of work teams. It would take them years to get through this organization that way. So they're trying to cascade these ideas down the organization in a way that can get through the organizations in a reasonable way. I know I've taken up way too much time, but the concept of spans and layers is supposed to address this. So we sort of created this because, you know, we kind of vilified middle management with the concept of spans and layers. That wasn't the intention, but it does have that effect. If you're not careful and follow through that concept, you can inadvertently end up making it seem as though those jobs are the villains in the design. It's not the intention. It's not the intention. And it's not the fact. I mean, there's still layers in the organization. But we did inadvertently, I think, create a lot of negative messages to managers that we very much need in this organization by some of those messages.
It also, I like the idea of a learning organization, but it seems like in difficult times, organizations tend toward hierarchy.
Yes, they do.
And so it would be, I think, a unique place, not that Cornell isn't unique, that could shift from, in a difficult time, from a hierarchical structure to a learning organization, particularly given our size.
Well, we're not hierarchical. That's part of the difficulty. So what's happened of late is we've actually tried to apply hierarchical decision-making to a non-hierarchical organization, which is why there's so much resistance to some of the most recent decisions.
I guess I was thinking about the individual divisions or colleges, which feel...
They can
feel hierarchical.
Some are. Yeah, it's. I think the best word for where we are right now is chaotic. We're in a very chaotic situation, and if you're trying to address the situation that you're in, and it feels very chaotic, that's difficult, and it's exhausting. I mean, that wasn't one of the words, but you know, people end up sort of checking out of exhausting situations. It's been going on for a long time. And what you want to feel is excited and positive about the organization that you're in. And I think there is a rebuilding opportunity, because I think that that's where we are getting. I really do think that's where we are getting on the non-academic workforce side. And I think it's a great opportunity for the employee assembly to be part of that rebuilding opportunity. The key, though, is to frame the role you want to play in that. And I guess the walk away, the final thing I would say is you can assign the role or you can jump into the role. And rather than sort of say, well, like, what's HR going to do about morale, I would reframe it and say, like, how are we going to participate in the conversations around morale? Because, I mean, it takes all of us to move through where we are to where we want to be, and it will take a while. It isn't going to happen, you know, overnight. I mean, we'll be rebuilding for a while. And I think, you know, there's things that we can do for individuals in terms of stress reduction. We should be looking at those. We should be talking about those. And then, you know, I do think, you know, some thought about climate, although, you know, it's not all positive to do climate surveys. So it's worth thinking about, but it's something to think about. You know, I know this isn't exactly what you were looking for, but I think it's a worthy conversation. I've brought this up for years with the EA. What role do you want to play in terms of the morale on campus? And, you know, I'll come back around again. But I would encourage you to have your next conversation with Chris or Chris and Kathy. They are really good in this area, and they have. And I'd frame it around some of the things they're doing related to work redesign. Because ultimately, until people begin to have a sense of control over their work, they will not be able to focus on some of the other issues that they have regarding the workplace. I mean, it won't solve it, but you won't get any attention, anyone's attention, while they're barely able to deal with the work that they have on their plate.
One thing that the agriculture field station is doing right now is working with Catherine on the line of sight and the idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a fairly easy concept, but we're working with farm managers, and it's just the acknowledgement that you can't do everything. And so there's this idea that you've got different audiences that want different things from you, you focus on what you need to get done. And I think just the acknowledgement that that's coming from the top,
mm-hmm.
I think, is helping the farm managers. And this, like you said, it's going to take a long time to get through all organizations, but I just wanted to give a plug to Kathy.
Yeah, Kathy's fabulous. Well, we've talked about line of sight from HR for a long time. And, you know, in chaos, the key is control. You know, when you can find control, Sam Baffert calls it muddling through, but when you can find your sense of control, you begin to identify a point at which you can see the horizon that helps you to recognize that the circumstances, long-term circumstances like the one we're in, get resolved slowly. And so you need to develop a sense of control during times of chaos, and a line of sight helps you to do that. Mm-hmm. You to see the horizon and recognize the pathway.
I'm envisioning some sort of skip, smart skip.
Yeah. The cone of silence.
With chaos and control.
Well, you know, and honestly, humor helps a lot. We're a big proponent of that in HR. And recognizing, you know, that some of this you have to lighten up a little and you know, realize that in the end, you know, Cornell will not fail, and not everybody working today can say that. You know, they're not everybody's in an organization that will be here in a year. And so, you know, with all the stresses and strains, we have a lot going for us. And start trying to get some sense of perspective through humor, through, you know, control and calm, through okay. It just helps. It does help. And I think, you know, any of those kinds of strategies you can think about, and then partnering with us on things that we can do will make huge, huge difference. So we're ready to partner. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm leaving now.
Thank you, Mary.
Did I take any pizza? No, I brought my pizza.
Thank you.
Just to let everyone know, Les and I are actually meeting with Kathy Berkren on
Monday.
At 8 a.m.
At 8 a.m.,
mm-hmm. Bright and early. So we'll have something to report at our New Year meeting.
I don't know if anyone else should. So that was a great meeting with David Gorton. He told us that generally the major layoffs are over and the size of normal at the university. I sat in right after that meeting, and I was happy to go back and share that news. Mm-hmm. And there were four, what I would say, middle management, associate director, and higher in the room, and they looked at each other and they're like, that's not true. And I'm like, well, the president just sat at the table and said it. And so there's clearly miscommunication. And so then here, I'm, as an employee, I'm like, okay, well, did the president just sit at the table and tell us this? Or, you know, or they are ill-informed. But, you know, it's stuff like that, you know, and I'm like, okay, let it go, don't be affected by it. It does, it's demoralizing.
Right, and I think that's what happens. It doesn't kind of trickle down to where the majority of the employees are sitting.
Yeah.
And that's part of the
problem. You know what? For a state contract area, we have a new governor. It really might not be true.
Right. Well, and they didn't think layoffs were not going to happen at all anymore, you know.
Well, but you guys are helping. But, you know, there's an overall sense. This happened to me yesterday in a union shop area where one guy, the leader, said, we have a 5-year contract. You all will have your jobs for 5 years. And the shop manager said, no, they don't believe that. And they said, no, you will. Nope, I don't believe it. And they just don't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Thank you.
Well, my job was cut. So
there you go.
Just actually happened one day and that was it. There was no other. So I'm just saying, from my point of view, you know, the individual units have a certain kind of control over a budget, which are shrinking, and they feel pressured to change programs and reallocate resources from one place to another. And so that's exactly what I think we're seeing. Mm-hmm. So it may not be sort of an overall kind of cut. What we're seeing is this is the danger of the strategic plan and the spans and layers, is that as colleges re-up and change their profile, positions are going to disappear and reemerge in somewhere else. And the person who's in position one may not necessarily be suitable for position two. That's the piece. And I wish I had brought that up. Maybe that's something you could bring up with Kathy on Monday, because it didn't even occur to me. But that's the vulnerability, I think, that some of us feel. You know, we were hired for this, mm-hmm. and we're not suitable for that, and there's no replacement.
Any other thoughts from our meeting? Anything that you want us to bring up with Mary on Friday? If there are, let us know tomorrow. Or for Kathy.
Well, just the idea that she turned it back to us, mm-hmm. I think is interesting, and I could see the EA coming up with a few do's, mm-hmm. a few things to do. And one of the things they didn't say in front of Marianne is that I think there's a grassroots effort going on where units are kind of commiserating amongst themselves. But if there's a way to have a conversation to hear what people are feeling without it turning into something more negative, mm-hmm. I think there'd be an opportunity for us. And we could craft it in a positive way. The meeting we had yesterday was a wellness committee, believe it or not, that spontaneously formed so that people could help themselves through stuff where they don't have that much control. So I'm just throwing that out.
So you're talking maybe focus groups or something like that?
Yeah, but, you know, we don't have to focus on the target every single staff member. We could go small group to small group and see what happens and kind of pilot it. And I wrote a note here. I don't know if you've read The Tipping Point, that book, but something's got to catch, you know? And so we could be, whatever words they spoke. Yeah, just like the hush puppies, and one thing could lead to another, and next thing you know, everyone's buying hush puppy shoes. Mm-hmm. Again.
Yeah. All right, then we can jump right into the meeting minutes. We already found one new word in the English dictionary, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure did.
Does anyone else have any other notes for the minute?
So I would suggest that word be changed to 9 voting members were present and replace the word with proxy votes were received from Gary or G. Stewart and Jason Moore. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily, I think, proper to say how Gary and I voted.
Right.
So just change the mystery word to proxy votes, and I think it'll be good.
On the second page, where it says everyone was comfortable with being responsible for entire unit or campus, I think maybe you added what I was saying was entire unit or campus they weren't familiar with. Right, we were talking about
it wasn't their own.
Yeah, they wasn't their own.
Right. Anything else?
Footer. You got that too.
What?
The footer has the wrong date.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, a motion to approve the minutes with the changes.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Beth, you want to talk about the trustees?
No, I had one committee meeting. I will pass. It was uneventful, buildings and properties. So I'll fill you in after the big meeting in January.
Just like flushing for Kirby.
He's in my whole world.
Oh, yes. Old business. Ari put together for us a draft membership revision for the charter, which we don't really have time to read now, but he also put together... Alright, did you give a copy of the the resolution too?
No, I didn't print it because then I wasn't sure if I wanted to make more tweaks to it.
Okay, so I will. Well, I'll focus. Ari put together a resolution for us to look at and vote on. So I will forward it to everyone when I get back to my office, and people can look at it.
Is this the resolution for the EA expansion?
For the EA expansion.
For this. Mm-hmm.
So this would be what the charter changes would look like, and then a resolution which, as Ari wrote, whereas the limited membership of the Employee Assembly has encumbered its ability to achieve important goals, particularly in assuring adequate representation in its committees and the committees of other assemblies. Whereas the Assembly believes more employees would be of interest to serve if the number of seats were increased from 13 to 19. Whereas the Assembly believes that more employees would be eligible and interested to serve if current statutory and endowed restrictions were removed. Whereas the Assembly believes that such a change would not significantly affect its ability to represent the diverse opinions and viewpoints of the campus community.
Be it therefore resolved that the Assembly adopts the attached amendment to its charter. Be it further resolved that this resolution be transmitted with attachments to the President for his approval. So I will send that to all of you, and you can argue semantics, but that's the kind of the nuts and bolts of it. But essentially, going with the model we loosely talked about at our last meeting, going from 13 to 19 members, getting rid of the statutory and endowed, but simply making them exempt, non-exempt seats.
Can I just ask a processing question? So after you send out the resolution, does that mean that we will be able to move on the resolution at our next meeting, or does that mean at the next meeting we discuss it and we need to the following meeting for both?
Okay.
If we review it, we should be able to vote on it.
I think.
I thought you had to give at least one.
It's a one full meeting notice.
Of a vote or of a decision?
It gets tricky, but I think in the spirit of it, if everyone is really okay in saying that it goes, the final language or almost final, minus a few grammatical changes, goes out a full week prior to the vote, that we could then vote on it at the next meeting.
So I'm going to go back to my office and send this out to everyone, and we don't meet again until January. So if people have comments or tweaks, and depending if we get a lot of like, wait a minute, I don't like this kind of stuff, then we'll have big discussion, really tweak it, and then we could vote on it at the meeting after that, right?
Yeah, and then we'd also want to make sure everyone explicitly knows that it's a very important vote. We need everybody's vote, so if you're not in the attendance, that you should arrange for a proxy vote.
Just a principle about proxy voting for something this formal. I'm pretty sure proxy voting isn't permitted unless it's explicitly spelled out in the bylaws, and I don't think it is right now, or if it is, it's missing certain specifications.
Okay.
So, and the other aspect of proxy voting is, unless it says it explicitly otherwise, if the motion is debated in a meeting and the person isn't present, then they shouldn't be voting on it because they don't have all the information that people have in the meeting.
I think though last year, and Jason, correct me if I'm wrong, we had something we voted on. It may have been the emergency grant fund, but people voted by proxy saying, as long as there were not substantive changes to the spirit of the resolution, this is how they cast their vote. So obviously, if we said, oh, a comma should be here, or this, you know, and should be changed to the. It was okay, and maybe we need to look at our charter more.
I think even if people are calling in the meeting with like the calling com, they should be present for whatever debate there is on the resolution report.
Okay. So I will ask people to take a look at their calendar and make sure that they can be here at that particular.
Yeah, is it realistic to do a meeting? I mean, to do a vote that day, since it's that first week of January 5th.
I know you won't
be
here.
I'll be here.
Are there other people who may or may not? Just anyone taking off that week after the holiday? If you are, let me know, and then we can table our vote to the next meeting.
I'll look into it. But I mean, the spirit of it is that everybody should have a vote on an important issue. It's a vote where we need a two-thirds vote. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could probably be doing scheduling things forever until every single person is at this table. So it's not likely that if it's this polished by this point that there's going to be any substantial debate. So.
Yeah. Any new business? We have 55 seconds. Beth?
Yeah, I'll use the 55 seconds. It's your fault, because you told me this could be interesting, or maybe it was your fault this morning. I want to throw out this idea, just in case it's worthy. With communications, a lot of people are now using their personal telephones for business work. And a lot of people are getting smartphones and using them for business work. And there is a policy. I'm just putting on the table two questions. One is, do we want to take a look at that policy and maybe, you know, the employees, we can't ask for anything right now, not in this environment, but, you know, maybe we can. Maybe we can talk to purchasing about coming up with a deal or some sort of allowance for people who don't meet the need, the business need, to have a Cornell-provided phone, but use it for business.
And in the policy, I mean, I read the policy a little bit, in the policy it does say if you use it for a certain percentage of work time. They don't cover your whole phone, but they can cover a percentage of your phone.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some latitude in there, but then it gets down to the individual units who are having to cut so many things out of their budget that there really isn't. But there is kind of an expectation there, I think, now among supervisors that, oh, you have a phone, you're accessible 24/7.
Well, then don't get a phone.
Yes,
I'm being silly.
I just think there might be something there, something that we can do for employees. It might be little, but I'm putting it on the table.
Maybe, I mean, we have a deal with Verizon.
Maybe we can see a better deal.
But maybe the deal needs now to be expanded to include some portion of the data plan.
Yeah.
We have a deal with AT&T.
But that's something that we should add.
Can you find out who's in charge of that? Maybe have them come in and explain it at the agenda meeting.
I'm a staff considered in need of having a cell phone, and I don't know if anything aside of the whatever the Cornell discount is that Verizon Wireless offers, I think it's 19%.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know of anything in addition to that that's offered as a discount.
Mm-hmm.
So if there were a discount on phones or data plans, I would suggest that be available to you and staff.
Yes, everybody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were just proposing that for staff who were not in.
Well, no, the university, just in general, getting a better deal.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Yeah, that would be fantastic. And it's an open-ended question. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Anything else?
If I could just ask if you haven't sent in your sleep and hope dates, I received four of them.
Sorry.
Oh, you did.
Do you have speakers already lined up for now?
Yeah, I had sent out the
email.
I can send the email.
No,
I know there's one date that we probably can't do, and it's because the speaker is hoping that her department is the February 3rd. Sorry.
Mm-hmm.
The speaker is hoping her department is going to be the one who serves. But other than that, they're still fairly open.
And Linda, the wellness program is a sponsor of that as well. And so I've asked my staff if they want to serve on any of the days. So, more than ever.
And then one other thing I just throw out there is with the changes in the committees that the UA is looking at, I think we may indirectly or directly be affected by that. So, for example, I went to the Sustainability Committee meeting the other night, and what was communicated to us is if it goes through with the new format that they will not probably have a Sustainability Committee anymore, whereby they won't need a representative from EA. And I think there's other committees like that. So that might be something for us to just think about, because I think the vote is expected in January, February, and UA on the new structural committees. Okay, so I just would like to make sure that gets on the agenda when it happens so that we can understand how it may or may not impact us, since we have representation of transportation committee and three others. Put it out there.
Anything else? All right.
Move to adjourn. Second.
Linda, was that what you were going to update us on when we did that once around?
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.